What's up, you guys? Welcome back to the R&D Wrestling Podcast. I'm Ryan Brower.
And I'm DJ Gruber. And today we will both be discussing with you guys AEW's pay-per-view era in 2019 before they went to television and our top five tag teams in AEW today.
That's right. So we're very excited to get going with that, you guys. Thank you to everybody that is listening to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We're also up on YouTube as well. We'll have video feed there. If you guys subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, you know, we're usually putting up YouTube shorts as well. So you guys are definitely going to want to check those out. Before we get into our main topics today, as DJ just mentioned, we're going to go through, I guess, what I've now kind of dubbed like our little current events topic when it comes to like stuff that's kind of currently going on in the world of wrestling, whether it be WWE, AEW. So I'm going to hit DJ with a couple of topics. We're going to get his thoughts. I'll kind of give you my quick thoughts and we'll kind of go from there, right? So DJ, the first of which that I want to talk to you about is the Blackpool Combat Club storyline that is currently going on in AEW. Bryan Danielson, it appears, has either now either A, become a part-timer or might actually be retired. So kind of give me your thoughts on like what you've been thinking of this storyline so far and your thoughts on Bryan Danielson.
Well, I like the storyline. I think it's been probably one of the best of the year so far. Do I think that Bryan Danielson is retired? Not necessarily. I think he's going to do, you know, like any other legend would do, you know, be a part-timer, because he is getting up there in age and he has mentioned many times before, like how he wants to stop being a full-time wrestler. So that's what I think Bryan Danielson's doing. But otherwise, I think the BBC is probably one of the best factions in AEW so far, considering with how many factions they don't have going on at the moment. And I think that it's just going to keep going up from there. And who knows? Maybe Bryan Danielson comes back at the end of the year. You never know.
I would love that. I think that where I think we're eventually going to take this. So at the time of this recording, they just did an angle on Wednesday where the BCC took out Chuck Taylor, longtime friend of Orange Cassidy. Unfortunately, his career was cut kind of short. Now is a backstage producer in AEW. They took him out, like they kind of pilmanized him with the chair. And Orange was like rushing to get in there to try and save him, but he was too late. And so Orange just had like this like look on his face, because he's kind of been sitting there trying to avoid the fight with Blackpool Combat Club so far. But now I think this is going to be the thing that gets him in that fight. And I think that the main event of Full Gear, and we'll probably already know it by the time this goes out, but I think it's going to be Orange Cassidy versus Darby Allin for the World Championship. Or not Darby Allin versus Orange Cassidy, excuse me, for the World Championship. Darby Allin, I think, is going to be the world's end match. And maybe that's where Darby finally wins the championship. We'll have to see. So moving on to the next topic of interest, Samantha Irving, a ring announcer for WWE, has apparently left the company. It doesn't sound like she's going anywhere else in terms of the wrestling industry. I think from all accounts, she wants to focus on her music career. At least that's kind of what I've gotten out of it. Who knows? Anything can happen. She could be in AEW by the time that this goes out. You never know. But yeah, let's hear your thoughts on that, DJ.
Samantha Irving. I remember hearing about this, and I'm thinking, okay, she's going to AEW because we all know of their latest signing that went there. Mm-hmm. Number one, I didn't know that she was a singer. Is she?
Yeah, that's actually like music is her main passion.
I thought wrestling was, but I clearly haven't looked into this, so I'll let you take it from there.
Okay, yeah, no. So, of course, the WWE extremists, which is what I've dubbed the fan base, that WWE is the only thing that's allowed to exist and no other wrestling is allowed to exist and every other wrestling sucks. And for those people that just like WWE that are like cool with other wrestling being out there, like those are the people I don't have any problem with. But these WWE extremists, man, they did not take too kindly to Samantha Irvin leaving. They, for whatever reason, man, like just immediately just went after Ricochet. Like, come on, man. Like, bro.
Come on, and, guys.
Yeah, it's like, all right, at the end of the day, man, it's like, who are you to judge what someone else does with their life? Like, as long as they're not, like, committing any crimes or doing, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. Samantha Irving, she wants to pursue other things. Like, what's wrong with that? Well, it doesn't matter if it's like if someone was leaving WWE. We talked about this last time with the Lucha Brothers. Did we like that the Lucha Brothers were leaving WWE or leaving AEW for WWE? No, we didn't like it. But are we happy for them in the fact that they're going to pursue something that they seem excited about? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one thing that some people, especially in the pro wrestling industry, it's, you know, they make business decisions at the end of the day, and Samantha Irving's clearly making a business decision. And what annoys me about being a fan of pro wrestling is, you know, how no one can respect each other, you know, like NFL or, oh, you know, baseball and basketball fans, because, you know, they can understand a person leaving, you know, for, you know, business, family,
another team,
and all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, if someone, you know, leaves WWE or goes to AEW or vice versa,
it's the end of the world.
It's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, oh, okay, I hate you now. Like, guys, we're all human. We're all human beings at the end of the day. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I'm right there with you on that. So moving on, best of luck to Samantha Irving. Whatever she does next, I think she is definitely going to succeed because she is a very talented person. Moving on to our next topic of discussion, sticking over with the WWE, something positive for the WWE, the Motor City Machine Guns. At the time of this recording, we are on week two of their run in the WWE, and they are already the tag team champions. We were all kind of sitting there saying, like, okay, what are they going to do with these guys when they go over there? What's going to happen? And they're already the tag team champions, so good for them.
I'm going to be a little biased here, and I'm not going to lie. I'm really frustrated that they didn't come to AEW because I think they could have had 5-star matches with the Young Bucks and, you know, picked up on that rivalry from All Out, you know, that one pay-per-view they were on with Jay Lethal. But, I mean, good for them, I guess, that they got the titles, and good for them that they found some place where they can, you know, be happy and, you know, be successful. But I'm really bummed, man. I really wanted them to come to AEW. I'm not going to lie.
I am too. No, I'm definitely in the same boat with you, dude. I'm definitely bummed out about it. But like, I'm not going to go on Twitter and attack them for going over to WWE. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't going to be like that. But
I'm not going to do that.
No, and I know you won't either. But yeah, man, the fact that it was actually kind of cool. Like, I know, like, in the match itself, there were a lot of, like, outside interference and stuff. So it's kind of like, okay, I would kind of like them to win the titles clean. But if they're going to be involved with anything, like, the fact that they had a hand in the Bloodline story right now, which is, like, the most over thing in the company, the fact that they got to be, like, a part of that, I think is, like, one of the biggest things that they could have done in WWE, to be all honest with you. So we'll have to see. Who knows? For all we know, in like 2-3 weeks time, they could just drop the titles again and be doing nothing. But for the moment, they seem to be doing pretty well for themselves.
One thing that concerns me about Motor City Machine Guns is because WWE is not a tag team specialty. They are not known for their tag teams. And Motor City Machine Guns are a good tag team. I just worried, you know, that they're going to be like, you know, second fiddles, if you know what I mean. You know, like, they're not going to be the stars that we all know they can be. Not like when they were dominating TNA and all that stuff. Like, I'm just very concerned that they're going to go back to the old ways, you know, and make them not the star tag team that we all know they can be. But
it's definitely, you know, possible.
They're already tag team champs, and who knows? Maybe they actually have a good storyline for once and actually have good title defenses. Who knows?
I've got one more topic of discussion for you today before we move on. And that is, because I don't think we talked about this last time, but AEW is going over to Max. Very, very exciting.
Yep. Oh, man. When we found out this news, man, you and I were like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Please give us some more info on that.
Yeah, so AEW, for all intent and purposes, they're going to be moving all of their content onto Max. That like includes Dynamite, includes Collision, it includes their pay-per-view library. All of their pay-per-views are going to be streaming on Max for a discounted price. That doesn't mean that if you buy a Max subscription, you automatically get the pay-per-views. They still have their pay-per-view model. It's actually really smart because one of the things I've been hearing a lot of people talk about, and it's very, very true, once you leave the pay-per-view model, like WWE has done, it's hard. It's almost impossible to go back to because you've conditioned your audience to not have to pay X amount of money for a show. So AEW is trying to hold out and keep their pay-per-view model to make as much money off of that for as long as they can. And that includes with this Max deal. You will, I don't know like any official prices at this point of like how much pay-per-views are going to cost, how much the discount is going to be. But I am so, as a wrestling fan, as an AEW fan, I am so relieved that they have the Max deal, if nothing else for this podcast, because now I have full access to the AEW library. We can just go back and watch any Dynamite episode and just pull it up for the sake of this podcast whenever we need to. I am beyond excited.
No to ourselves quick, but sometime on our channel, we need to find out how JR started the whole Chucky T thing, like why he hated him, man. We have to look into that, man. We have to
That has been one of the long running jokes between me and DJ and our friend group, is like this idea that JR hates Chuck Taylor. So, and that was something that, like, you know, me and my friend Miles, we used to listen to, well, he still does. I somewhat still listen to the Deadlock podcast, and like they would always joke around about how JR hated Chuck Taylor. And I'm like, when did this start? So it's like, now I'm like, all right, I need to go back and figure out at what point did this all start? Cause I've heard salty JR with Chuck Taylor before. So it is a real thing. I just need to figure out where it started and how this all came about. So that's one of the things, you know, we'd like to joke about and be like, oh, hey, you know, JR hates Chuck Taylor. Why? But we'll figure that out eventually. So
hearing
yeah.
Hearing JR being salty is the best part of watching Dynamite or
oh, it's funny. Dude, listen, I know there's a lot of people that hate salty JR. At this point, I just find it so funny to me. Like, I've just embraced it. And I think, like, every time he's on there and he's super salty, like, it always gives me a good laugh at this point, man. I know that, like, for a lot of people are done with it. They're like, oh, my God, like, JR doesn't care about AEW. He doesn't care about the product. And it's like, man, I get the sentiment. And listen, there was a point where I was probably just as frustrated about it as you guys are. I've gone from being angry about it to thinking that it's the funniest thing. So, yeah, that's kind of where my head is at.
It's so weird not hearing him on Dynamite today that I don't take his saltiness for granted. I really don't.
Oh, yeah. Don't take the saltiness for granted, man, because one day it's not going to be there anymore, like, permanently, and it's going to be really sad.
And then all of a sudden, you know, we're just going to have, you know, all these other guys try to fill in his role, but no one can replace the great JR, man.
No, absolutely not. I think with that, you ready to move into, like, our first big topic of discussion here today?
Always, man.
So let's talk, you guys, about AEW's pay-per-view era. This is kind of what I've liked to dub it as. The first 4 months of AEW, it was just like four shows that they had did before they went to like weekly TV starting in like September or October. There was Double or Nothing, Fyter Fest, Fight for the Fallen, and All Out. And this was like the true like... origin. I know we like to say that All In was the origins of AEW, but this was like their initial first shows as a company, like under the AEW banner. This was it right here before they went to TV and started AEW Dynamite. So today we're going to kind of tackle these four shows a little bit. We're not going to go like deep into every single match because we'd be here all day. But we kind of want to talk like, you know, in depth about one or two matches per show, maybe three, and kind of give us like our overall thoughts on it. So I'm going to run down the card real quick from this Double or Nothing show in 2019. From May 25th at the MGM Grand Arena, AEW's first official show. The card went as follows, and this is for the main show, by the way, not the pre-show as well, just the main card. SCU versus Stronghearts, which consisted of SCU, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky, taking on Stronghearts, which consisted of Sima, L. Lindemann, and T-Hawk. Then there was a four-way between Britt Baker, Kylie Rae, Nyla Rose, and Awesome Kong. It was initially a triple threat until Brandi came out and was like, actually, this is now a four-way, but it's not me in the match, it's this person. And Awesome Kong came out. Then had Angelo and Jack Evans versus Best Friends. Looking at some of these matches right now, man, like if you look at AEW back then and look at it now, like how did we get here? You know what I'm saying?
I get what you mean. Like I'm trying to think it through like right now. Like, you know, we had this good card back in 2019.
Yeah.
And not saying that the roster isn't bad today, but I'm just like, Where did time go? Like, what happened to our roster?
Yeah, it's like it became a completely different roster over time, man. Continuing on with this card, we then had a women's trios match between Aja Kong, Emi Sakura, and Yuka Sakazaki versus Hikaru Shida, Riho, and Ryo Mizunami. Then there was Cody versus Dustin Rhodes, match we're definitely going to talk about. Young Bucks defending the AAA Tag Team Championships against the Lucha Brothers. It was the only title match on this card. And in the main event, you had Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega. So, DJ, I will leave it up to you. What do you want to start out with?
Well, first off, I'd like to point out, hard to believe that we only had one title match on this whole card.
Because the AEW titles weren't a thing yet. They were going to crown world champion at All Out. That was what these kind of shows were starting to build up. So on the pre-show, you had a battle royal, like the first ever casino battle royal. And initially, the initial thing that was supposed to happen is Pac was going to fight Hangman at Double or Nothing. And the winner of that match versus the winner of Jericho and Omega were going to face each other at All Out in the main event for the world championship. I forget what happened with Pac, but something happened where he wasn't going to end up being on the card for Double or Nothing. I can't remember if it was of his own doing or if it was like visa stuff. I think it might have been of his own doing because he also was like the Dragon, or he was the Dragon Gate champion at the time or something like that. And I know there was also like that, him being the champion there, like they didn't want him to lose. I don't remember the full story there, but either way, Pac wasn't able to be on that card. So they did a battle royal on the pre-show, and that was going to determine the first number one contender for that belt. And Hangman won that battle royal. And then in the main event, of course, you had Jericho and Omega, and that kind of solved that. Enough of that ramble there. Continue on.
That was awesome. So anyways, I'm going to talk about our one title match for this card. Lucha Bros versus the Young Bucks. Let me just say... These two teams, hands down, represented tag team wrestling in a different way that I probably haven't seen it before. Like, you see these two teams, and you're just thinking to yourself, okay, I'm going to get a five-star match here, and that's what happens. Like, right from the get-go, too, like, we're getting these super kicks, you know? We're getting all these, like, high-flying moves, and, like, even Rey Fénix was on, you know, the top rope doing his little thing, whatever, his acrobatic moves, whatever, you know, when he, like, kicks someone, and I'm just like, who are these guys? I've never seen anyone like it before. And from that moment, I fell in love with the Lucha Bros, man. Like, seriously, Penta doing his Cerro Miedo thing. Like, man, I just fell in love with that team so many ways. It was awesome. But anyways, the Young Bucks and Lucha Bros clearly had a rivalry going on going into this match. And there was so much to be excited for. Like, even the ref, Rick Knox, was like saying, guys, let's have a good match here. I want a fair fight here. Fair, clean fight. Good luck. And may the best team win. And right from there, it's like, yes, yes, yes. That match was very awesome. And holy cow, Nick Jackson was electric too. I wanted to point him out because he like does his like, you know, his kick and then he goes out to the ring, outside the ring, and then he does that flip on the outside too. It's like, wow, I am seeing tag team greatness here. And I just couldn't get over it because like, you're seeing both teams go at each other hard and both teams are wanting to win. And it's just like, it was very awesome to see. And I just couldn't believe my eyes because you were truly seeing tag team greatness there. But at the end of the day, before I get to the end, I just want to say it was impressive when the Bucks hit a bang for your buck and we had like a 2.5 count there. Like Knox was so close to getting to that 3. And when I saw, I forget which luchador was down, kicked out, I'm like, oh my gosh, you do not see that every day. And that was just very awesome. But then when the Young Bucks did win it, I'm like, wow, that was the definition of tag team wrestling. I could not get over that match. And from then on, that was the reason how I fell in with the Lucha Bros and how I gained a respect for the Young Bucks because both teams, and I will still say to this day, were the backbone of bringing up AEW for the tag team division.
And it's ironic that we're talking about tag teams too here, because in a little bit we'll be talking about our favorite tag teams in the history of AEW so far. I want to point out that my favorite spot from this match, shout out to El Generico, was when Matt Jackson hit a top rope brainbuster to Phoenix. Shout out to El Generico there. And I loved the finish too. You know, you were kind of talking before. They kept hitting their big moves at each other. They were kicking out. And then Matt, they hit the Meltzer driver, but Matt was holding Phoenix with one arm because like his other arm had been worked over during the match. So the fact that he was able, I know Phoenix is like kind of a smaller guy, but the fact that he was still able to hold a full grown man like that with one arm in the pile driver position without dropping him, like very impressive. The match that I want to talk about next is the trios match between Shida, Riho, and Mizunami versus Aja Kong, Sakazaki, and Sakura. First of all, this match was amazing, but it's also more so this idea that if Tony Khan really wanted to, because we've always mentioned before how AEW has struggled when it comes to booking their women's division. And I say struggle, I don't even think they've given it much of a chance. You could have easily built your division around these six women if you really wanted to. And then you could, like, obviously, yeah, you've got like Britt Baker in there as well, Nyla Rose, you have other names. But this match alone proved to me why you should have booked these six women to be the center of your division. And if you actually would have given them more TV time instead of just like one match a show, you could have accomplished this. And these women were over. You even had the crowd in this match like chanting, "This is awesome." And this is, the crowd was chanting, "This is wrestling." They were chanting, "This is wrestling" during this trios women's match. And I don't even think they did that throughout the rest of the show. You had all of the building materials that you needed to make a successful division at the start. And I think Rio was like the only person that broke out of this because like they made her the champion. She was like the most over and stuff, but like you could have done so much with all six of these women early on if you really wanted to. And like, it kind of disappoints me that they didn't, but this match was absolutely amazing. Like, everyone came in there with a point to prove. I love like Sakazaki doing a springboard to break up the cover. That was amazing. There was a point where Emi Sakura hit Shida with a moonsault. Shida kicked at two, but the timekeeper messed up. And I'm like, I don't remember this. And I'm like, oh no, that's not how the match ends, is it? But like, luckily, like Aubrey was like, nope, that was two, that was two. And the crowd started chanting like, you fucked up, you know? And then Shida eventually would end up pinning Sakura to get the win. And the crowd stood up for a standing ovation. And man, like, listen, at the time, I wasn't like too big into like Joshi wrestling. Like I wouldn't have known really who any of these women were, but man, like looking back on it, like you really could have done something, man. And like all six of these women, absolutely amazing. Oh my God. I did have a JR quote that I wrote down here during this match. You're talking about salty JR. I think it was about Aja Kong. He said, "Well, she's not the kind of woman you're going to find in the kitchen making biscuits." What? Why, JR? Why?
You know, only with JR can you get these types of comments, man.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, God. Yeah. He was thinking about Cracker Barrel, that's for sure. Oh, and speaking of JR thinking about Cracker Barrel, we're going to get into that later with All Out. My goodness, though. What a match, you guys. Of the six women that are in that match, I think Shida's my favorite for sure. I really like Riho as well. Yuka Sakazaki, I think, is tremendously underrated. And I think it was cool that they kind of gave her like a couple weeks of spotlight on Dynamite. I kind of wish they would have done a little bit more, but it is what it is. I don't think AEW understands that they have like a gold mine with all of these talented women on their roster, and them not using them is, I don't understand it. Like, because like Americans aren't going to know who they are? I beg to differ. You put them on TV, each of them have different characters. It's not like they don't have characters. You put them on TV every week, just like you would any other wrestler, and people are going to know who they are. They did it with Riho, and like I said, we're going to get into it, but like she keeps getting like the biggest reactions in the early days of Dynamite when it comes to that women's division, because she was like booked properly. Like they did everything right. you know, except for the fact that there were times where she wasn't on TV, but we'll get into it. But at the end of the day, man, just put people on TV and they get over. As long as they're a good wrestler and they can tell good stories in the ring, they will get over. There, I'm done with my rant. DJ, if you want to move on to your next match.
Well, before I move on to my next match, all I'm going to say is all it takes is some good booking and a general manager or owner who believes in them. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, off to our next match now. I will say this was probably match of the night, in my opinion. It was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho for the main event.
You would think that, wouldn't you? Keep going.
Hey, he's my guy.
I know. That's what I said. I know. You would think that's your favorite match. I know.
Oh, hands down. So going into before this match, you know, Kenny Omega, they were starting AEW. Kenny Omega, you know, was coming out and saying like how he's the best in the world. And then when my man, Chris Jericho, comes walking out, they have a little stare down. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's a little brawl coming. And then all of a sudden, Jericho's like, you know, I've been out for too long. I got to fight the best and I got to beat the best. Even it means going through Kenny Omega. And I'm like, yes, I remember how exciting this was. Let me just say, I liked it how in the beginning they did all the Jericho entrances, you know, from his beginning to Lionheart to, you know, his Judas.
That was cool.
Oh, man, dude, I loved his intro so much. Like, Judas is on my top 10 songs in Spotify, man, not gonna lie. I've been listening to that song.
It's a good one.
So much, like, when he just comes out the Judas, like, even when we attend AEW events, like, when that song plays, you just got to go up and sing, man. Like, it's that type of song.
Can I just add real quickly as well? I would also like to point out that I was singing Judas and listening to Judas before it was cool to listen to Judas. Because I remember at that, like, that first press conference that they did for AEW, Jericho came out to that song. And I'm like, what is this song? And I'm like, is that Jericho singing that? Is that his band? And so I looked into it and it was. And I'm like, oh, this is actually a really good song. So, like, and I would just, like, listen to it on loop after loop. I'm like, this is actually really good. So then, like, when people started singing it, I'm like, all right, I'm glad people are finally singing it and getting into it. But, like, also I was kind of doing it before it was cool. Just saying.
So, you know, we get the start up, we get the classic stare down, we get the, you know, the holds, the chops, you know, your classic little startup, you know. But then, you know, when Jericho hits the wall of Jericho and Kenny, it's like, oh crap, is this gonna end early? But then he, you know, gets out of the ring desperately, and then all of a sudden, you know, both are like going at each other. And I think it was like 10-15 minutes into the match that both were busted open already. Like, there's already blood coming out. I did write this down in my notes. Jericho, holy cow, that man looked like he found the fountain of youth, man. Like, he's doing all these springboards, the flips. Like, seriously, that man looks like he didn't even get old. Like, he looked really good in that match. Like, there's a reason why Jericho's the top guy on my list. And like, from his intros to his, like, gimmicks to even fighting in the ring to back up his talk, like, there's a reason why Chris Jericho is one of the best today. And this match proved it with him and Kenny going back at it. And, you know, Kenny Omega doing all these dives to, like, diving and hurting Jericho's arm with a table, I think it was.
Yeah, like, Omega at one point goes through the table, I think.
Yep, and I was about to go into that too.
Sorry.
All good. We're teamwork here. And then Kenny got dropped on the table by Jericho. I'm just like, wow, this is something you don't see every day in pro wrestling. Like, seriously, someone going through a table, both guys busted open. Like, that is what you want to see in pro wrestling. Like, with that pay-per-view and that match, AEW just got up to a whole nother level. And to me, both tested how far they could go. And at the end of the day, Jericho wins. And let me just say, that was pretty awesome. And then all of a sudden, you know, he demands a mic at the end of the day, you know, and he's like, you know, give me a thank you. And, you know, the crowd boos. And do you know where I'm heading, man? You know where I'm headed?
They start cheering as well, like, before they cut to him. So they, like, Jericho thinks like, oh, it's all for me. It's all for me. Good job, guys. Thank you, everybody. But it's not for him.
It's for John Moxley. And let me just say, both of us were like screaming like little girls on Christmas, man. Like, that was our dream come true right there. We have all these legends in the ring and they're in the same company. Like, not gonna lie, when you showed me that pay-per-view, I'm like, yep, this is my new show now. this is my new show. I have to start watching this now. When are they getting on TV? Because after that pay-per-view, AEW, baby. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it absolutely incredible. To be honest, I really don't have much to say about the Kenny Jericho match from that show. I personally like their New Japan match better than this one. This one was fine. It, you know, it was what it was. But like that final bit of the show where, you know, formerly Dean Ambrose, now John Moxley, makes his way to AEW. Like, we knew that Moxley was going to be leaving WWE because, like, he was just, like, so fed up with them and he didn't want to be there anymore. You could tell, like, because I was still watching WWE in, like, sort of the final days that he was there. And I just kind of knew, like, all right, it feels like... Obviously, you know, Moxley is a great, you know, professional. He's a great worker. Like, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to go in there and, like, not do his job. But you could kind of just tell that something was off. And you just kind of knew, like, all right, this guy just doesn't seem like he's as into it anymore as he used to be. The moment that this guy walks into AEW and he hits Jericho with the dirty deeds, you know, now known as the Paradigm Shift, I could just feel this new found side of him that was like excited again. And like when he took out the ref too, and he's just sitting in the ring going crazy, like there was a new freshness to this guy, a newfound passion and vigoration for pro wrestling that I am so happy that he got back. One of the things that Jericho said early on when it came to like him wanting to join AEW is you need like three things when it comes to get making a successful company. You need money, which they had in Tony Khan and the Khan family. You need a television deal, which they got with TNT. Then you also need, I think he said like 6 to 8 main event talent guys. So, all right, let's think about that. You had Jericho, you had Cody, you Omega. Had Kenny Omega. I would argue the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks, you could put them in a main event tag team match. I totally buy them as the main event. That's 5 guys right there.
Mm-hmm.
Moxley's your 6th. That's your 6th man. So like this company, even without Moxley there, I was like all in on like this company like going forward, and like not necessarily like just, oh, just because Chris Jericho said these things, that's why I think this company's gonna be successful. No, but like with the talent that they had, with how good this show was and everybody that they were bringing in, I'm like, you know what? This is something different. This is something exciting. I'm totally here for this. When Moxley showed up, I'm like, okay, here we go. Now I do feel like we have everything we need for this company to succeed. We have a proper number of guys that can be in that main event spot. We've got young guys that we can build into that role, like a Hangman Page, like a Darby Allin, like a Jungle Boy. And we have like, you know, the great tag teams. We have great women's wrestlers. We have everything we need to make this a successful company. And after that show, man, I was so freaking pumped.
Double or Nothing was the start of my love and passion for AEW, like hands down.
And real quickly, if I can just talk about the Cody and Dustin match, I don't have to go too deep into it, but like that match, there was no reason for that match to be as good as it was. Like, holy crap.
Not at all.
They were bleeding like crazy, the both of them. And like at one point they're like rubbing their own blood on each other and stuff. Like, it's crazy stuff. And the final bit of the match where like Cody ends up winning. And first of all, as well, Dustin Rhodes, I don't think anybody expected Dustin Rhodes to like be that good in there with it. You know, because like people thought like, okay, Dustin Rhodes, like he's probably on his way to retirement or whatever. Fast forward to now and the dude's still going strong. But like at the time, even we were all thinking like, okay, this might be like his last match. This might be it. And after the match, when Cody wins, he sits there and he looks like he's about to start taking off his wrestling boots. And I'm like, oh no, this is it. This is it for him, isn't it? And Cody goes back in there. He's like, no, you don't get to retire. You don't get to do that right now. He's like, I need a favor from you. At Fight for the Fallen, I need a tag team partner to face the Young Bucks. I don't need a partner. I don't need a friend. I need my older brother. And Cody just starts getting emotional while talking. And I find myself getting emotional while this is going on. And it was kind of one of those things watching it where, once again, for those who don't know, I was like, WWE had me tapped out of pro wrestling, man. Like, I was done. For the longest time, man, for several years, I was doing it out of like, this is what I do every week is I sit down and watch wrestling. But I was miserable doing it. I hated it. I hated my intelligence being insulted every week. I hated seeing guys that I wanted pushed not being in the spot that they should have been. And I was like, I'm done with this. Maybe I just hate wrestling. And once I start getting introduced to like all the AEW stuff, I'm like, no, actually, I do still like pro wrestling. And this moment proved why I still like pro wrestling, man. Like, I got freaking emotional watching this. I still like pro wrestling. It's just the other guy, the senile old man who doesn't know crap about it, that's insulting my intelligence every week. But when you, like, you have the right people in place to give us wrestling that the fans want, like a true alternative to what the Fed is doing, this, it's perfect. And it proved, again, I still do enjoy pro wrestling.
It just comes to show you like how pro wrestling can make an impact on us in a big way. It's just a matter of, you know, trying to find the right show and content for yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to move on here. We're going to move on, I should say, to the next pay-per-view, Fighter Fest. Now, I really only want to talk about one match on this card that really stood out to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, actually, there were several matches that definitely stood out to me. But like, for the sake of time, we're only going to talk about just one. Let me run down this card for you guys on Fighter Fest. So it took place on June 29th, 2019. At the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida. This card consisted of Christopher Daniels versus Sima, and there was a triple threat between Riho versus Yuka Sakazaki versus Nyla Rose. There was then a four-way between Jimmy Havoc versus Hangman Page versus MJF versus Jungle Boy. I actually do want to tell you a story about this match real quick. I was watching BTE at this time, and this match right here might be the funniest way that a match has ever been booked in the history of wrestling. So it's through this YouTube show called Being the Elite, of course, right? A lot of you guys will know what that is. And at Double or Nothing, Hangman Page and MJF had a little bit of a stare-off with each other because Hangman said at that first press conference, I want to be the first world champion. And that was Hangman's whole thing. So MJF came out there and was like, no, man, like you ain't going to be a world champion. Like, that's going to end up being me. And he makes fun of Brett. You know, he makes fun of the fact that Brett got attacked by a fan earlier in the year at the Hall of Fame. Like, oh, wait, Brett, a fan's coming, you know, and he did that whole thing. And Hangman's like, look, man, I don't appreciate what MJF was saying out there to Brett. And he's talking on the phone with, I believe, Nick Jackson. And he's like, look, man, I want a match with MJF. He's not allowed to get away with this. Can you hear me on the phone? It sounds like you sound like you're in a jungle right now. Is everything okay? And it's like really the audio feed, the connection feed, the Wi-Fi, whatever, the internet speed, it's not up to par at the Jackson's place. So he hears the word jungle is like all he can make out of that call. And he's like, oh, you want a match with Jungle Boy? And Hangman's like, is the match good? And Nick's like, oh yeah, no, it's booked. And so they put up a graphic for Hangman versus Jungle Boy. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, that's not the match that Hangman wanted, but I guess it's the match we're getting. All right, that's cool. And then Hangman later on in the show is like, dude, why is there a graphic that says Jungle Boy? I asked specifically for MJF. Can you hear me over there? It sounds like you're in some kind of havoc right now. And I remember watching that. And I'm like, wait, Havoc? What? No, don't, Nick, don't say it. And like when Nick's sitting there, he's like, Havoc, oh, Jimmy Havoc. I'm like, oh, no. And he says, oh, all right, the match is booked, we're good. And so he put up a graphic for Hangman Page versus Jimmy Havoc. I'm sitting there dying laughing at this one because I'm like, son of a gun, guys, it's not the match. And then later on in the show, he's like, dude, why is there a graphic that says Jimmy Havoc? I'm asking for MJF. And this is after Nick Jackson's feed is all fixed. So he's like, I don't know what we're going to do, man. Like, I've promised all these guys a big payday. I don't know what we're going to do. And so Hangman's like, all right, fine. We'll do a four-way. And I just sat there dying laughing. I'm like, that is the funniest way to book a match of all freaking time. I love it. Hangman ended up winning that match, by the way, because like, again, if we're establishing Hangman as the first challenger, for, like one of the contenders for this belt, he's got to go on a bit of a winning streak. So he won the Battle Royal, he won this four-way, and then he wins a match at Fight for the Fallen against Kip Sabian. But anyway, moving on with this card, we've got Cody versus Darby. We've got the elite of the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega versus Laredo Kid and the Lucha Brothers. The Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros are destined to do this forever. And then John Moxley versus Joey Janela in a lights out match in the main event. We're not going to have time to get through all these matches here, but what I do want to talk about is Cody versus Darby, because going into this match, I had no idea who Darby Allin was. And I remember thinking at the time for this card, Cody versus this guy named Darby Allin. I mean, it should be fine, I guess. Like, okay, whatever. I mean, sure, should be a fun match. And the more this match went on, the more I fell in love with Darby Allin. And by the end of this match, I'm like, I kind of want Darby to win now. Like, I didn't know who this Darby guy was going into it, but like, I want him to win now. And in the end, and of course, I thought at the time, okay, Cody's so winning because it's Cody. Like, Cody's not going to lose. But it ends up turning into a time limit draw. And I'm like, you know what? That couldn't have been a more perfect way for you to book that. Like, neither guy had to lose. Both men were protected. And it's not like time limit draws. Like, this was the first one that AEW had ever did. So it was like, oh, okay. Like, we're establishing the whole wins and losses matter. There's a win-loss record. This is the first tie to go into the record columns as well. The fact that Darby Allin could say, like, I went the distance with Cody and Cody couldn't put me away. That's such a good moment for him. And after that match, I was like, dude, like, if AEW creates a mid-card championship, I want Darby Allin to be the first mid-card champion. Like, that was after that night, I was like, dude, I'm all in on this Darby Allin guy.
Darby Allin, man, I can't say enough about him. He was so awesome in the early days of AEW. Like, oh man, Darby Allin's one of the four pillars, you know, as they say in AEW. He is one of the pillars.
Yeah, I don't think that name was put in there for nothing. He has been one of the go-to guys in this company for the longest time, and I cannot wait to see. I hope he really does become world champion at some point. The dude freaking deserves it.
It's only a matter of time before he climbs Mount Everest, man.
That too. The dude's a maniac. Moving on to Fight for the Fallen. This took place 2 weeks after Fighter Fest on July 13th at Daly's Place. Daly's Place is going to become a very, very crucial place in the history of AEW, especially when we get to the pandemic.
2020.
So, yeah, man. Daly's Place, such an iconic place for AEW. There were six matches, on this card. You had MJF, Sammy Guevara, and Sean Spears, who at the last pay-per-view at that show where Cody fought Darby, Sean Spears came in there and smacked Cody with a chair that was supposed to be gimmicked. It wasn't, and Cody was bleeding viciously. I don't know if that's the right word, but you get my point. And they took on the team of Darby Allin, Jimmy Havoc, and Joey Janela. Very, very interesting there, because like the three will then end up becoming opponents at the next pay-per-view. Then had Angelico and Jack Evans versus Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus versus the Dark Order, proving that they have a great depth when it comes to this tag team division. Hangman Page versus Kip Sabian. I think you could have done Hangman. I think the role should have been reversed. Like, do Hangman and Kip at the last pay-per-view and then do the four-way at this one. I know, like, MJF then wouldn't have been a part of the trios match, but, like, I don't know. Like, I don't think that Hangman Page beating Kip Sabian before a world title match is anything impressive. If anything, it just gives Hangman Page a win, which I guess does something. It's better than nothing, but I don't know. I think the roles could have been reversed there if you were really intent on doing that match. You then had the Lucha Brothers versus SCU. Kenny Omega took on Sima. Man, Sima was actually, I'm actually realizing here, was actually a crucial part in that pay-per-view era. I don't think we see much of him after it, but man, he was in there with SCU for two of the shows, and now he's in there with Kenny Omega mixing it up. Very, very cool. And then in the main event, you had Cody and Dustin, the Rhodes Brothers versus the Young Bucks. And that's kind of the match real quickly that I want to touch on, because what an incredible match, man, that I think proved that, first of all, tag team wrestling in AEW could be the main event, just like the Young Bucks said that it would. It also goes to show you, man, that like, and we can even talk about this too as we get into All Out, but like, AEW is going to have all the essential parts that they need for an essential tag team division, the one that DJ has always praised as the best tag team division in the world. And this was also a match, like, at the end of it, I was ready to get emotional when the Bucks got on the mic. Unfortunately, it kind of got cut off because their show was running low on time and they still had to present a check for the victims of gun violence. That was like one of the reasons why this show existed, is they wanted to donate money to the victims of gun violence. They had raised $150,000 towards it, which is very, very cool. At the end, like, you had Kenny coming out there, Brandy, Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, Shad Khan was out there. And like Cody, one of the big things that Cody said there was like, you can counter program me, you can counter program the Bucks or Kenny, but you cannot counter program AEW. You cannot counter program the passion that is All Elite Wrestling. And that comes off the back of them announcing their TV deal, announcing that they're going on Wednesdays, and all of a sudden NXT just magically decides that they're going to run on the same day at the same time. Because remember, they don't see them as competition. I'm obviously being sarcastic.
What a coincidence.
What an odd coincidence. Yeah, they don't see them as competition, but yet they're willing to go head to head with them at the same time on the same night. Very, very funny how that works. And then it's funny that they also mentioned that NXT is a third brand. Triple H mentions that time after time after time after time. And then when AEW beats NXT in the Wednesday Night Wars, definitively, they then take it back and say, well, they only beat our developmental. Good for them. Like, funny how that works. Funny how the narrative changes depending on what ends up happening. Very, very, very funny. Pick a lane, guys. Fight for the Fallen, I think, was like my least favorite of the four shows, but still a decent show nonetheless.
For our next pay-per-view, we're going to be talking about All Out, which took place Saturday, August 31st in 2019. And our card for this contained seven matches, and it started out with SCU versus Jurassic Express. Then we went to Pac versus Kenny Omega, a Cracker Barrel clash. No surprise there, man. Darby Allin versus Jimmy Havoc versus the bad boy Joey Janela, Dark Order versus Best Friends, Hikaru Shida versus Riho, and Cody versus Sean Spears. And then two of the matches that I'm going to go in depth talking about, the Lucha Bros versus the Young Bucks in a ladder match. And then the AEW World Championship inaugural title match, Hangman Page versus Chris Jericho. And if you are cool with this, I'm just going to get into the Lucha Bros match right away, man.
Go on ahead.
All right. So, oh my goodness. And to think that you couldn't get enough of them from Double or Nothing, they have defied my expectations in a big way from this match. And I'm still saying it to this day, even though they're struggling right now. My AEW has the best tag team division in the world, man. Like, I'm telling you, you know, they do good in a normal match, but then you put ladders in there. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, am I in heaven right now? Like, bro, this is awesome here. Like, seriously, we're getting a ladder match with two teams that are willing to kill themselves. Hint, Rey Fénix is the one who always kills him, tries to kill himself, you know, every match. So like, oh, wow, man. So, you know, the Young Bucks and Lucha Bros are going at it in this match. And let me just say, I could not believe half the stuff I saw in there, you know, from jumping on the ladder from the top rope, you know, jumping off the ladder to practically breaking all the bones in their body for this match. Like, they're doing all these flips, kicks. Like, dude, I can't do half of this stuff and I'd probably be injured in, like, after the first 20 minutes of that match, man. Like, I'm just saying.
And they were doing like stuff like simultaneously as well. Like, they were doing dueling spots. I'm sure you'll probably get into this, but like doing the double like rolling cutters off of the ladders to the big brothers, or the double spears through the table on the outside. Just like, they were all in sync with each other.
Like, it's insane with the chemistry that both these teams have, because you can tell like from any spots, like they knew what they were doing and knew how to do it. Like, I could watch them fight all day, every day, man. Like, I don't care. Give me the Lucha Bros and Young Bucks. I have my tag team wrestling right there. Like, that's all I need, because these two teams alone are the reason why tag team wrestling is the best and why AEW has been the best in the tag team division for a long time. And I will say, I was pretty happy to see the Lucha Bros win this at the end of the day. But I will say, I was kind of scared for Rey Fénix, because I swear, man, anytime there's a Young Bucks versus Lucha Bros in an extreme match, is it just me, man, or does Rey Fénix look like he's going to kill himself every flip, every time he does a huge flip?
I know, man. He does this all the time where like he'll just do these insane dives and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then you're like, oh my gosh, thank goodness he's okay.
Like, seriously, man. Like, when they say Zerlo, Miero, no fear, they have no fear. Like, they were willing to put their bodies and lives on the line for that match. That was just impressive tag team wrestling. And I can't say it enough. AEW has the best tag team division.
And I think this was for the AAA Tag Team Championships as well, once again, which I think the Lucha Brothers, I think, won back somewhere in between Double or Nothing and All Out. Because I feel like I remember them saying that Lucha Bros were the champions. And then by the end of the match, I feel like I remember Justin Roberts saying, and still. So yeah. there must have been, I know, I think they had like six or eight, like somewhere between 6 to 8 matches that year. So there must have been somewhere in between there at like one of the other shows that they would have won those titles back.
Yeah, Lucha Bros were champs going into that match. Yeah, they were.
Do you want to know what JR compared this match to?
Please do. I can't get
JR. I wrote this quote down. So JR, he looks at Golden Boy, who Golden Boy was like one of the commentators on like these first couple shows. JR says, the crowd is eating this up. It's like good barbecue sauce, Golden Boy. You can't get enough of it. JR compared a tag team ladder match to barbecue sauce. You could tell where his mind was at. And if you go back to the Cracker Barrel match, all he could talk about was Cracker Barrel. And like when he brought out the biscuits, he's like, oh, those are softest biscuits in the world. You knew where his mind was at.
Dude, I don't know if we'll ever get to do this, but it would be awesome just to talk with JR and just hear him, how he like talked about half of those things, man. Like, it would just be awesome to hear his point of view, man. Like, it would be awesome.
Dude, I'd be like trying not to like die laughing there and stuff. I'd look like a complete idiot, but like
it would be hard.
In all seriousness, though, like JR is one of the greatest commentators of all time. Like, I know we sit here and like joke around about like, you know, how funny his commentary is now. He is genuinely very good at what he does, especially like you go back to like the Attitude Era stuff with like Austin and Triple H and all them. Like, he had like some great calls during that time, is like any commentator would.
I think we could tag team this match too, because you're probably gonna have some opinion on this too.
But wait, can we talk about the post-match angle that happened after this match first?
Yes, let's get to
about
that.
About who? Yeah, so after the match, after the Lucha Bros win, they don't have time to celebrate because two masked men attack them and they remove their masks, and it's Santana and Ortiz. And at this point, I'm like, okay. Matt and Nick Jackson say that they want to make tag team wrestling the best in the world. You've got three main event tag teams in the ring with you right now between the Young Bucks, the Lucha Bros, LAX, as they were known as in TNA at the time. I'm like, that's your main event scene right there. And you've got all these other teams around you with depth, that you've got like Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. You've got, the Dark Order, you've got Angelico and Jack Evans, you've got Best Friends, you've got Private Party. If you really wanted to, you could make Cody and Dustin a tag team again and have them in the tag team division as well. There was a reason why everybody was saying like, oh my God, the tag team division in AEW is the best. It was because of like the teams that they had in there and what they were trying to build at that time.
It was insane, man. Seeing them come out, and I was just like, oh man, we are gonna look very good going into television, man. Like, it is gonna be one heck of a first episode.
And not long after this, Kenny Omega and Hangman Page become a tag team as well. Like, they were cooking on all cylinders, man, in that tag division.
Like, seriously, Tony Khan, kudos to you, man. Like, seriously. Yeah. You could do well. That was insane.
It's kind of not hard to make the best tag team division in the world when the other company didn't give a crap about tag team wrestling unless it was NXT. So yeah, no, just saying.
Oh, totally agree with you there. Totally agree. So anyways, off to the next match here for the first AEW World Championship, Hangman Page versus Chris Jericho. And let me just say, what a match, man. Like, what a match here. Like, seriously, Hangman's angle, you know, saying how he wants to be the first champ. And then, you know, you got Chris Jericho, you know, coming in, being like, I have unfinished business and all that, obviously. Like, see, you could not have a better first match for the title for AEW, honestly. Like, this was a very good match overall. All the angles were good. Hangman and Jericho were going really good back and forth. Like, It was
Hangman
insane.
Proved why he deserved to be in that spot, because I going into this match, like 75% of the crowd was going for Jericho, 25 was going for Hangman, I felt like. And Hangman, I felt like, was at a little bit of a disadvantage with the crowd early on, but like the dude was in there and he was doing like a bunch of crazy stuff. Like, you know, he did what I've dubbed as his pay-per-view moonsault, where, you know, jumps off the top rope, does a moonsault to the floor to the other person. Charlotte Flair does the same thing a lot of the times. And yeah, man, like Hangman's family was in the crowd, so they made that a big deal. He went for a shooting star at one point, which was freaking awesome. Jericho countered it into a codebreaker, which was freaking sick.
That was awesome.
Yeah, Jericho countered the buckshot with a codebreaker. Hangman kicked at two. I thought that was a really good near fall. The finish of the match, I thought, was like the most incredible part, you know, in terms of, personally, I like the tag match better. And I think that probably could have been the main event. I also understand that this is for the first ever AEW World Championship, so it has to be the main event. Like, you really didn't have any other choice, right? Like, what are you going to do? Put like another company's belts in the main event above your own? Like, that doesn't make any sense perception wise. So of course it had to be Hangman and Jericho. But yeah, man, like Hangman hit the Deadeye. Jericho kicked out at 2 point. It was like the closest 2.99 to 99 count on that show.
Like, watching some of these matches, I'm just like, are these reps blind? Because like, seriously, the amount of 2.99 counts, man, it's like, what are you doing? Can you count faster or something? Like, it was, yeah, it was amazing to watch.
He hit the buckshot again, the buckshot lariat, but he doesn't go for the cover. He goes for a second Deadeye instead. And then he ends up, Jericho ends up backsliding it into the Judas effect. And he took a little bit of extra time before getting into cover. This is like a Triple H technique, which is you hit your finisher and then you take a couple extra seconds to get into the pinfall, but because you know you're winning the match, so it like protects your finish even more. So that's what Jericho did there. It was like Judas effect. Sat there for about 5 seconds, then crawled into the cover and then pinned Hangman and won and became the first ever AEW World Champion.
They say no one kicks out of the Judas effect.
And no one did. Kenny Omega didn't do it. Hangman Page didn't do it. They're really putting this move over, man, as like a death move, you know, for Chris Jericho, like that simple spinning back elbow. But yeah, man, this... We talked about it in the first episode, but Jericho was essential to the start of AEW. And as much as I was sitting there rooting for Hangman, because like I was there for his story and I wanted to see him win the world title, I completely understand the optics of putting the championship on Chris Jericho with him being a recognizable name. Was very crucial at the time to give him the championship going into television. Another thing as well from this card, if I can just real quickly talk about it, Kenny Omega was supposed to fight John Moxley. He instead ended up fighting Pac because I think Mox ended up getting hurt or he might have been sick or something. I can't remember. Let me see if I have it written down in my notes somewhere. Mox had a staph infection. That's what it was. So he couldn't at the pay-per-view. This was also the show where a little bit of the bubbly meme started, because like they did like a post-show thing afterward and Jericho was just walking around with the title being like, I demand a thank you and everything. Like, I'm the reason AEW is here, blah, 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 blah. And he goes into his room and there's like this bottle of champagne and he goes, oh, little bit of the bubbly.
Oh, I remember what I was about to say too. Like, for those of you who are wondering why I love Jericho so much, this is the reason why I like Jericho so much. And if you watch the first episode again, you will understand why I put Jericho number one on my top guys list. That's all I'm saying. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Still.
That's why.
For sure. I get what you're saying there. Do you know, now that I'm thinking about it, you said you didn't watch Dynamite this Wednesday. So that I'm now thinking about it means you don't know what Jericho did on the show.
No, it's been a busy week for me, so I'm going to have to pick up the slack after this.
Chris Jericho just once again became the Ring of Honor World Champion. He's now a 9-time world champion, is Chris Jericho. Okay. And I got so frustrated watching it. I hated it so much. You would have loved it, and that's why I was like, I laugh, because I thought of you. But like, oh my, I hated it.
I love Jericho as a champion, don't get me wrong, but I miss his inner circle, you know, when he was a champion, you know, back when AEW first started. Like, I miss the inner circle. I'm not going to lie. I miss his inner circle, you know, leading the way with Judas and all that. You
so
know.
You, it sounds like you care more about, like, early days Chris Jericho in AEW, perhaps more so than current day Jericho.
I'm not going to lie, man. Like, I love the Learning Tree gimmick today, but if they're just going to make him an ROH champion, then why should I be invested in that because, you know, it's not like, you know, ROH is,
it's not like they're doing much right now.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, they just need to figure out what they're doing with Ring of Honor, because for the longest time, Ring of Honor hasn't meant anything. And that's really unfortunate, because like I go back to Athena having like the longest reigning Ring of Honor women's title reign of all time. It's like this historic reign. I wish I would have seen it, you know, but at the same time, I feel like they haven't given me, like, the company hasn't given me a reason to tune in. Like, you can't find it on TV. I'm not paying for Honor Club. Sorry, but no, I've already got AEW. Like, I'm good there. Like, I don't know. I think they need to figure out, like, they need to give the show a purpose and find a way to get more people invested in it.
I'll be honest with you. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Jericho go after the TNT title against Jack Perry right now. Like, that is how much I want to see Jericho be on, you know, going after a major title. Like, not saying that the ROH title is a major title, but I miss seeing him as AEW World Champion. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think Jericho ever needs to hold the AEW Championship ever again. And I don't think he should hold any AEW Championship ever again, in my opinion. I think the FTW title was good enough for what they were doing, but that's just my personal opinion. I know we're going to, you know, obviously have disagreements about Jericho there. And one of these days, like I said, we'll do a podcast about it. We'll do a debate about it for sure.
That's going to be a fun day.
Yeah, man, for sure. For sure. Do you want to get into our list for today? Like our top five lists?
Yes. And I was about to ask you too, are we going to do what we've been doing, 5-1, or you want to change it up and go 1-5?
I say we keep doing what we're doing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know what I'm saying?
Good point.
Do you want to start? I can start. Sure.
You take this one.
Okay. Yeah, so at my number five, we're doing a top five list this time to just kind of like shorten things up a little bit. We'll kind of see how this goes and we'll kind of play this new strategy out by ear. Play it by ear, I should say. But for my number five for the best tag team in AEW, I got to go with Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus. I said before, I kind of alluded to it a little bit before, but I thought that they were like the most over tag team on the face of the planet at the time, specifically Luchasaurus when AEW had first started. And I think that they should have been the initial tag champs. I think that they had all the momentum behind them. I understand the optics of giving it to SCU, but sometimes See, if I'm a promoter, and I guess it's different for me because I'm sitting here as a fan, I'm not the one who has to like deal with all the egos of wrestlers and all the politics of it all and stuff. But like, if I was a booker and I saw like how over Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus were at the time, and I definitely liked them for sure, like I would have called an audible and been like, you know what, let's put the tag belts on these guys, or if nothing else, make them our second champs. But they didn't even do that. It took them, I feel like, years before they finally put the belts on the Jurassic Express. Just crazy. Oh, yeah. But I love them. I love Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. They're both great.
Was it like full gear of 21 or 22?
Yeah, they didn't give them the belts until like 21 or 22, like 3 years after the company was already going. Like, I felt like it was kind of 3 years too late at that point. Like, I get they added Christian to the group to kind of make things interesting and, you know, be like, all right, well, when is Christian turning on Jungle Boy? But other than that, it was kind of just like, I just didn't really care.
At that point, it was like,
like that's the thing that AEW has to work on, is like striking while the iron is hot. And because WWE's been guilty of it as well, is like, if you don't strike while the iron's hot, then people aren't gonna care anymore when you finally do it. So, yeah,
all right, going on to my number five now. The Acclaimed are my number five, like, they are a big part in AEW's tag team division. And I'm not gonna lie, man, I loved in the early days too, when they started, Max Kasser's raps, you know, and, you know, when he would get, you know, a little offensive, you know, or a little bit chirpy, you know, about the other company, WWE, sure, hint hint, yeah, like that was cool and all that. But like, what have they really done, honestly? Like, yes, they've won the tag team titles once, but other than that, like, what have they really done, man? Like, I'm not ripping on them, like, they are a good team and all that, but I feel like they've had more trios matches with Billy Gunn than, you know, sure, being part of the best tag team division, honestly, because yes, both are good in their own ways, but I just feel like they haven't done enough yet. Like, I feel like they're wasting their potential, I feel
sure.
like.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's so interesting with the Acclaim, because you'll hear a lot of people online say like, oh, the Acclaim suck, and like, we're done with the Acclaimed and all this stuff. But yet, like, every time they're on TV, like, they get these big reactions and stuff. So it's like, all right, well, clearly this is just a Twitter thing that people don't like them. Because like, you can tell when there's a difference between like, when something is, when people complain online and they continue to boo when they go to the shows, then you know, like, okay, this isn't just an internet thing. This is like a universal thing. Like hashtag we want Cody. The first, when that went viral online, that didn't just go viral online. That first Raw that they went back after Cody got screwed out of being in the title picture with Roman, the crowd was chanting, we want Cody. So you knew that like the majority of the fan base felt a certain way about Cody. When it comes to the Acclaimed, it seems like it's really just a select group of people that don't like them as a team. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think they're okay. I feel like, I don't know. I just don't know, I guess, what more there is for them to do, because they kind of have mixed it up with a lot of the teams that are already in AEW. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm sure they'll figure out something with them, but yeah, it's not like I'm really clamoring for them to be on TV every week.
No, like I'm honestly fine with them being on Collision, you know, and having quality matches there, honestly.
Sure.
Yeah, like I'm fine with that. Like there are no
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like people think of Collision as like this demotion or whatever. Like, bro, if I was a pro wrestler and I had the opportunity to be on a television show every week having banger matches with people, I'd freaking do it. Like if I love pro wrestling enough as and that's my passion, I would love to do that, you know? But like, some people whatever. Mm-hmm.
Like, people say it's the B show, like, even still, like...
Guys, I mean, it is. Don't get me wrong. It perception-wise, it is, and they need to do better about establishing it as an A show. But if I am a wrestler, like, because people like to sit there and, like, get, you know, like, oh, but the wrestlers feel this way. It's like, okay, but I think for some of these guys, like, just the fact that they're on TV every week, like, even if it's on Collision, like, I'm sure they're grateful for that opportunity.
You know? Oh, yeah, for sure.
So moving on to my number four, we are going to go with Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. I was such a huge fan of this tag team. Very unlikely team at the start, but such a great story with them being members of the Elite. They had one of the best tag team matches, if not the best tag team match of all time in AEW with the Young Bucks at that first Revolution show. Oh my gosh, what a match that was. And just the story of the Elite and them making it look like, oh, Hangman's going to turn on Kenny. And then it ended up being the other way around. And Kenny like ended up really turning on him. And it led to the whole storyline of Hangman becoming world champion and stuff. It's my favorite story in pro wrestling. So shout out to the singles pairing of Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. They treated them like a tag team for the longest time. Like even though they were two singles guys, like they were having tag team matches with each other all the time. They did their job.
I couldn't agree with you more. And now moving on to my number four.
Sure.
Jurassic. For me, it's Jurassic Express. Like they were the foundation of what set up the best tag team division, in my opinion. And sure. To me, like you couldn't have created a better young tag team up and coming. Because you have Luchasaurus, your muscles dinosaur. You have Jungle Boy, who to me was like the Tarzan, you know, bang star who they can, you know, develop in years to come. And then they got, oh man, he was my favorite of the group to watch entertainment wise. You have Marco Stunt, you know, the little energizer cheerleader, you know, like,
yeah.
It was a good group together. And when you saw Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus together fighting, it was like good complimentary wrestling together. They have chemistry, like, when they did win the tag team titles, I was so beyond excited. It took them too long, in my opinion, but I'm glad they did it when they did. I just liked their matches. I liked their promos, and especially with Christian, like it was just unbelievable to watch them grow from the early days of AEW to before, you know, they went their separate ways.
I'm going to move on to my number three, which will be the Lucha Bros, former tag champs, former trios champs with Penta. These guys are such an exciting team to watch wrestle, and I feel like we kind of talked about it as we were talking about some of those early pay-per-views before, how great the Lucha Brothers are. The matches that they had with the Bucks early on, man, you love to see it. And even the cage match that they had with them where they finally won the tag titles, like that might have been like my favorite match of their like that they've ever had with them. I know that people don't like the Best of Seven series. I know I'm in the minority on this, but I loved it. And unfortunately, because people didn't go on.
Well, all I'm saying is that that best of seven series was the best thing to happen to both teams.
Okay, I'm glad that you were in agreement on that, because it feels like everybody else that I know that like has watched it didn't like it. I love the idea of this best of seven series, man. And I, unfortunately, because a lot of people didn't like it, or like people weren't tuning in to watch it, they're probably never going to do something like that ever again. But it's really a shame, because I think best of seven series, when done right, can be really good. And I thought that the best of seven series that they did with these guys was really good. I think like their final, I remember the match seven where they won the tag team titles was kind of rushed because they were low on TV time. But that was also when they realized that like this, like it wasn't working viewership wise. So it was kind of just like, all right, quickly go out there, have a quick match with each other, get the belts, win the thing, and we're going to go off the air, whatever, you know. But I loved it. I really, really loved it. It's one of my favorite things that the Bucks and the Lucha Bros have ever done in AEW, in my opinion.
Totally agree with you there. Now, moving on to my number three. They were awesome when they came in 2020. They came from WWE, FTR, baby.
Yeah.
When they came in 2020, I'm like, what just happened? Did we actually pick up, like, it was awesome, man. Like, we picked up a legendary tag team, you know, that solidified themselves as one of the best, in my opinion. And you can agree with me on that, probably.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. So when they came over to AEW, I'm like, we are going to be in tag team heaven now, because, like, I won't forget when they started it out, too. Like, they had, like, this, like, big eight-man tag, whatever, when it was the Lucha Bros and Butcher and Blade versus the Bucks and FTR. And you could you could feel the tension rising, like, we're going to get a showdown between the Bucks and FTR. And we could see it in, like, the many more months and years to come, like, those two teams will go at it with each other in big pay-per-views. And to me, they kind of helped solidify the AEW tag team division, because without them, who could put on the best in five-star matches besides the Lucha Bros? Because to me, you needed that other team to do it. And FTR to me was that team. And they had some of the best promos in a couple years for tag team wrestling. And they sure as heck could back it up, man, with the talk. Especially with Tully Blanchard on their side, like they were.
Oh, I love the days when Tully was with them, dude. Oh my god, I'm so glad you brought that up, man. Shout out Tully Blanchard.
When Tully Blanchard was out there with them, and they had like, you know, their disco theme that they still have today, it was like no one is stopping this team from winning. And when they did have the titles, oh my gosh, man, was I in tag team heaven, man? Like it was amazing to watch.
I'm gonna save my thoughts on FTR. Oh, you might wonder why. I'll just wait. At my number two, from 2016 to 2022, I thought this team was like the best tag team in the world for those like 6 years. And that's the Young Bucks, three-time AEW tag team champions at this point. Admittedly, I haven't been a fan of their more recent run, but those like first couple of reigns that they had, and like the run that they were having, like, you know, obviously having the match where they challenged Kenny and Hangman earlier in the year. They failed to win the titles then, but they would go on to beat FTR later in the year in a match that I really enjoyed. These guys, they've had great matches with a lot of those teams, and even younger teams like Private Party or Top Flight. Like, I feel like it's kind of impossible for the Young Bucks to have bad matches, man. Like they know what they're doing in there. And I know the Young Bucks have always been critically acclaimed, right? Because like every time that someone has a complaint about the Young Bucks will just double down on it and make you even more annoyed about it, which I think is one of the funniest parts about them, is the fact that they don't care about your criticism. If you have a criticism against them, like, oh, they do too many super kicks. Okay, well, we're going to do about 20 more per match just to annoy you, which I think is super, super funny. And so many people get like fake offended over it and stuff. But like, man, it's the greatest thing.
This was a hard decision for me, because to me, both these teams are, they deserve a number one, but for a top five list, I have to, you know, go as the list follows. For my number two, I'm going to go Lucha Bros, because
okay,
this tag team, they won me over from Double or Nothing. And ever since then, like the amount of times Rey Fénix is about to kill himself, we're all like, no, Rey, no, you have a family and all that stuff. It's like, that is why I love tag team wrestling and want to see it, because when someone is willing to like put their bodies and lives on the line, it's like, this is what pro wrestling is all about here, you know? Not like, you know, your hold, jab, you know, kick, you know, somewhat of a pin, whatever. It's about, you know, going hard, having blood come down your body, whatever. And you have to, you know, put these flips on and everyone going crazy, commentary yeah. going, you know, ballistic. Like, those are the kind of tag teams that make memories and become greats. The Lucha Bros, to me, became great. And I'm going to keep saying this until I get confirmation. I'm going to be so frustrated if they do go over WWE, but I'll be happy for them, you know, like they're making a good business decision. But like, there is just so much that they have done with AEW. And like, I feel like they could always do more. But like, at the end of the day, they have to make a business decision. But I do believe that they are the best tag team in the world, and that you put them against anyone else, Young Bucks, FTR, anyone else, they will be the best tag team in the world right there.
I think this is going to be our first list that we've done where like our top three are all the same, but like inner, like mingled in like different spots. You know what I'm saying? But you and I are kind of like in the same boat about like who we think the best tag teams in the world are. You know what I'm saying? Like we both kind of have that idea. Cause at my number one, you know, I had Lucha Bros number three. Number two, I said the Young Bucks were the best tag team in the world from 2016 to 2022. And that is because I think from 2022 on to today, the greatest tag team in the world today is none other than FTR. Don't get me wrong. These guys were good in WWE. They were one of my favorite parts about WWE, man. Like when I was watching some of that NXT stuff, man, like the Revival, like those were my guys, you know what I'm saying? And when they came up to the main roster, I was so happy and then very quickly disappointed when they weren't doing all that they should have. And when they came to AEW, they were doing all that I thought they should have. These guys, two-time tag team champions at this point, they are collision guys, these two. They are, what do they call the collision fan base? The colliders. These guys are true freaking colliders, man. They have always been reliable anytime that you need them for a tag match, man. They're always going to show out. It doesn't matter if it's a team like the Young Bucks or the Lucha Bros, like a top level tag team. It doesn't matter if it's a team that's coming up like Private Party, even a team like the Outrunners, they're called, right? Like that have just recently become popular in the AEW sphere. They will work with anybody and have great matches. So no complaints there, man. I truly do believe that they are the best tag team in the world. In 2022, I don't know if you remember this, DJ, they held three different sets of tag team championships. It was the AAA tag titles, the Ring of Honor titles, and the New Japan tag titles. They held all three of them at the same time in 1 year.
Oh, I remember that. That was
my gosh.
That was the most dominant run I've seen in a long time. And to just think they got wasted for a minute.
Yeah, when they were at the other place, for sure. I would have loved it if they would have won the tag team titles in AEW too. Just win four sets of tag team titles. I was ready for it, man. I'm like, these guys are the freaking best, man. And look, I will even say this at this point, man. Like, I know FTR, I think, are getting out of position now where they're getting ready to retire pretty soon. I don't even think I need to see them win the tag team titles again. That's not what I want out of... if they do win the tag team titles, don't get me wrong, I'm going to be very excited about it because I love these guys. But I think that's not what I need their last run to be. I think what they're doing right now, just working with other tag teams to help try and get them over, FTR will still win some matches, you know, they'll win some, they'll lose some, but just being in there with all these different tag teams to help try and elevate them, I think is the best thing that FTR can do at this point for the sake of this tag team division. And believe me, it desperately needs it. I know we've talked about how AEW has the best tag team division in the world. I would say that over this past year, the tag team division has been poorly, poorly booked, and it is shown. And they are like, since All Out, they are desperately trying to get some of these teams up in the title picture and stuff. They're doing it with Private Party. They're doing it with the Outrunners right now, having them work with FTR. They are trying to get teams in place back to like establishing why this is such a great tag team division. So FTR, if they continue to do what they're doing for like, you know, the rest of their career, if they win the tag team titles, man, don't get me wrong, I'm going to be very excited. And I think they do deserve one final run, but if they don't, I'm not going to cry over spilt milk about it.
Mm-mm. Totally agree with you there. And I will say though, one thing that we can take good away from their run in WWE was their OG theme song, man. Like, that theme song was pretty good.
Yes. I love their, dude, shout out to, I think it was like, what is it? CFO Money that made their song. They were such a great group that made a lot of great themes at that time. Oh my gosh, man. I love that theme as well. Shout out.
It was amazing.
For sure. Yeah.
So for my number one, I mean, it's going to be no surprise, but I put the Young Bucks at number one because.
Fair pick.
To me, they were the reasons why AEW started and why they were and why this company is here today. And like, you can't take away what they've done in the early days, you know, like from starting AEW to having all these matches and, you know, being the guys who were the backbone of this company too. Like, you know, when they were getting criticisms and all that, like what you were mentioning earlier, like they would double down and be like, okay, we'll give you more of it. Like, also, if you read their book, I recommend you do. It's a very good book. Like, even if you read their book too, like, they were one of the reasons why tag team wrestling is the way it is today, because like these are two brothers who, you know, are passionate about wrestling, and you saw it on TV. Like, these two guys just love to fight. They love to entertain people, and you could put them as a face or a heel, you're going to get a stellar Young Bucks either way, because those two know how to put on a good promo. They know how to make a good intro, like the super kick party, man. I'm telling you, man. They know how to do it there. Even though I will say, like, it's a little sloppy right now, even them as EVPs, you got to admit, they're still doing a decent job. Like, you know, they're still being the bosses, you know, they're still being the great heels, but...
No, I definitely like them as heels, but I don't think that this run personally has been that good. Like, I was so ready for Private Party to win the tag team titles, and they still, honestly, they actually might be tag team champions by the time that this goes out. But this, like, latest tag run that they've done, I don't think has been the greatest, and part of it maybe just has to do with they're not always on TV, and the Elite storyline hasn't gone to the depths that I was hoping that it would. Maybe that will change at some point, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
I will say, though, for the OG Young Bucks, when Kenny Omega became world champion, that was the OG Young Bucks too, because I think they were heels at the same time Kenny was champ.
Like, yeah,
That was the time to be a Bucks fan, honestly. Like,
you know, I still love the Bucks, and I love everything that they've done. It's just like this latest run, I admit I have not been that big of a fan of. Sorry, yeah. I know I interrupted you.
You're good. And I'm agreeing with you too. Like, yes, this run is a little sloppy, but even still, like, you know, you can see some of the work they're putting in and like how they're good either way. And like,
for sure.
And they're the reason why AEW's tag team division is the success it is today. And that's why they are my number one.
No, definitely. I think the positives of the Young Bucks far outweigh the negatives. So no, I definitely, Young Bucks being at your number one, man, I definitely respect that for sure. So with that, you guys, that is going to wrap us up for today's podcast. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out, for listening, tuning in. Next time, you guys, we're going to do a special episode. We're going to do a little bit of a different episode the next time that we do a podcast here. We're going to do a tribute episode to Brody Lee. The time that we put that podcast out, it will be within the month that he passed away in 2020. So we thought, you know what, let's do an episode honoring him and talking about some of his best moments, you know, whether it be from AEW, from WWE. We'll talk about his career, his life. And it's just a little something that I kind of want to do to sort of, I guess, my way as a wrestling fan to honor him. So hopefully you guys are excited for that. I think it's going to be a fun time. We're going to have a lot of great discussion. So yeah, thank you once again, everybody, for listening to us. Be sure to check us out wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we'll see you guys next time.